Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Suns in four.
One, two, three, four.
4 minutes of nonstop Suns news, highlights, and takes on the team. Brought to you by 72 Sold. 72sold.com, where you can sell your home in 72 hours for thousands more than selling the traditional way. Suns in four.
Yeah, Suns beginning a road trip in Toronto last night in an empty Scotiabank Arena, and Jay Crowder set a tone early with the first hoop of the
Devin
game.
Booker gets it from Chris Paul, top of the arc, swings to Crowder, right side three. Good for Jay Crowder, and the Suns are on the board.
Always a good feeling when Jay Crowder hits his first three-point attempt. That goes back to last year.
Yeah,
first
that's right.
With the team.
That's a good point.
All right, the first one went in. You could probably expect some pretty good things from Jay Crowder,
yeah.
And that was definitely the case. Early 3-0 lead there. Toronto would respond. Fred VanVleet has been one of the best players in the league over the last couple weeks. Came in with like six straight 30-point games, reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Week. He got hot early on.
Fred VanVleet to the left baseline. Fadeaway jumper over eight, and again, swishes home for VanVleet.
Yeah, VanVleet with the step-back shot there. That put Toronto up 4 points at 16-12. The first quarter would end with Toronto up 31-23. They led by as many as 11 in that first quarter, so kind of an uphill battle for the Suns for a lot of the night. And it continued. But Chris Boucher, also in the second quarter, he got very involved and did so with this dunk.
Bounce pass in the left corner for Birch. Penetrates around Crowder, then finds a wide-open Boucher for the easy dunk. And that was set up by Kem Birch in the penetration. And a nice cut from Boucher, who has 4 points off the bench.
With a minute 29 left in the second quarter, the Raptors were back up by 3:45-42. Jay Crowder hit a big one before the end of the half.
3 to inbound, far sideline. Holds above his head, finds Jay Crowder. Quick trigger three. Good for Jay. And that was a big one for the Suns. They needed that right out of the inbounds pass. It's also a 2-for-1, 31 seconds left.
Yeah, and then Siakam missed a shot. Crowder missed a three-pointer near the buzzer. So the Suns went into the break. Bick, down two, 48-46 to Toronto. And that's where the speech with DeAndre Ayton and the communication happened.
That's right.
We will fast forward into the fourth quarter now. 71-69 Raptors going into the fourth. So a tight game throughout, and the Suns would fall behind by as many as six in the quarter. Precious Achiuwa with a layup 9 minutes to go. That put Toronto up by six, 79-73. But the Suns would go on a run, a 16-4 run to take the lead back. And Mikal Bridges had a big shot in that run.
CP3 dribbles against Ananobi, gets a screen from Ayton, bounce past Bridges, open for three, and he cans it on the right side. Suns get back-to-back trifectas from Crowder and Bridges and take a four-point lead. That's the biggest advantage they've had all night.
Yeah, and it would grow to six when DeAndre Ayton hit a shot, 89-83. Things got tight again.
Mm-hmm.
The Raptors went up by one with a minute 41 to go on two free throws by OG Ananobi, 90-89. And then Devin Booker, who had struggled all night and struggled recently with his shot, hit a huge one.
Booker off the inbounds pass, fading and hitting on the right baseline from 20 feet away. Suns retake the one-point lead, 91-90.
And that set the cue for Chris Paul to hit a huge shot of his own.
CP3 into the forecourt. Gets a screen from Ayton. Penetrates. Right elbow jumper up and around the rim and in for CP3. He gets the roll from his spot, and the Suns have a three-point lead.
And he used all of the rim on that shot.
Yeah.
93-90 at that point.
That's what it's there for.
Ananobi would come back with a layup to make it 93-92. And then it turned into a foul fest and a free throw shooting contest. And the Suns won that contest. They hit 6 of 6 in the final seconds, and the final call sounded like this.
He finds VanVleet in the backcourt. Chris Paul defending loosely. VanVleet will just throw it up at half court and miss everything, and that'll do it. The Suns win 99-95, the final score from north of the border, where the Suns have now won three straight in the series with the Raptors and are 31-9 on the season. They're the first team in the league to 31 wins this year.
John Bloom on the highlight there on the Suns Radio Network, a four-point win for the Phoenix Suns. And part of the theater, if you will, in the final seconds of that game, Bick, with the free throws.
Yeah.
Devin Booker hit two, which he also got a lot of rim on those two free throws. And the first one, he was clearly agitated by the presence and the actions of one of the Raptors mascots. There was nobody in the arena, but they had mascots running around. Mm-hmm. In fact, the mascots were blocking the view of the television audience at certain times. It was crazy.
Really bizarre. What is a mascot even doing at the game? Why is that part of game ops when there's nobody there?
He's hyping up the PA announcer, and the PA announcer is hyping up him.
Right, yeah. Right. And I saw a lot of people clapping back at Devin Booker as almost like, remember when Devin Booker got a lot of grief for complaining about being double teamed in a rec game at the gym?
In the summer, yeah.
Which I totally took Devin Booker's side on that, because that is Bush. You don't do that in a rec league game when you're trying to get a sweat. Okay. I thought that was interesting. That it kind of showed you the level of agitation Devin Booker had in him last night. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because the game just was not going his way. And it's, you know, to his credit, he made those free throws. I told you one of the interesting things about the end game last night was Monty Williams, to his credit, is fully convicted in playing the foul the other team, so they cannot attempt a three-point shot. And it was something Mike D'Antoni would never do. He had too much anxiety.
That's true.
And it burned Mike D'Antoni a couple of times. Burned him in a playoff game against the Spurs. Remember that three that Tim Duncan made?
Mm-hmm.
The first one he had made all season long?
About put that out of my mind, and now it's back in.
Sorry about that. But to Monty Williams' credit, there is no hesitation at all when it comes to these endgame situations. And last night, Devin Booker fouled himself out of the game doing it.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing it didn't go to OT, because you're playing without Devin Booker in overtime. Well, but the Suns are really good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. But Booker hit the two big free throws despite the efforts of the mascot. He talked about it after the game.
I was trying to get him out the way. It worked. I'd rather be shooting with him without him down there. We play a shooting game all the time, every day. These two do the same thing. And I complain then. So that's just me.
And more from Booker on the mascot.
Yeah, issues with the blow up dog.
No, I wouldn't have blow up when it was the other live one. Yes. We have shit out.
When the blow up thing was up, man.
No, he was alive.
The real mascot.
Yeah. We cool now, though.
We're cool now. Yeah, because you got
that's funny.
And it was weird.
Yeah, we were
too,
beefing for a while, but we're cool now.
The
we're good.
The demeanor changed after the first free throw. You can tell when Devin Booker is upset about something.
Yes,
and you
can
see it on his face. And then he hit the free throw. The timeout comes, and the smile comes over his face. And you could see him talking to a couple people, including the mascot, I think.
Right.
That was a very, very funny
exchange. It was hysterical, especially when the mascot just kind of went and sat in the corner.
I was going to say, they show him in the corner with his head down and his arms down.
His shoulders slumped. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, but it's just so stupid.
I got to wear this outfit now. Right. I'm in timeout. What am I, grounded?
Right.
I'm grounded from the next game in the empty arena.
That was crazy.
It was a rough night shooting for Devin Booker again. But Monty Williams, the head coach, gave him credit for being able to affect things without shooting the ball well.
I don't think anything is going to mess with his confidence from that standpoint. You just have those nights, you know, where you can't buy a bucket, and we didn't, you know, we had 25 assists tonight, but I didn't think we were as efficient as we can be. Book only had 13 shots. That's typically not something that we see, but the ability to affect the game, even when you're in foul trouble or your rhythm is off because you're in and out of the game because of foul trouble, that's a talent and a skill that we don't take for granted.
Yeah, and your point, too, on Booker taking that foul in the closing seconds, ended up fouling out of the game.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that I noticed at the end, too, was we love Eddie Johnson on this show, but he was talking like that game was over when it was still very much in the balance with a couple seconds left. And I was like, uh-oh, tempting fate here.
Yeah.
Had that gone to overtime, that would have been interesting.
Shooters,
they do.
Yeah, it was an aggravating game for me to absorb on a lot of different levels. But at the end of it, I thought, wow, that was something. Yeah. That was very sturdy that they were able to find a way to win that game. Because that's a good team that had been playing hot. As you said, Fred VanVleet was just on a crazy hot stretch. That's a good win for the Suns.
It is.
All things considered.
31-9 now. Coming up next, Kyler Murray about to make his playoff debut for the Arizona Cardinals. Can we expect to see anything different? It's a fascinating question. We'll get into it next. It's Spickley and Marotta mornings live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Cardinals championship chase coverage presented by 72 Soul on the home of Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Spickley and Marotta talk cards in the playoffs. Now.
Me personally, frustrated. More to the team. You know, I think everybody realized, you know, it's a new season. You know, really nothing in the past matters at this point. So I think that's the focus. You got to go 1-0. I mean, this is your one and done if you don't win. And I think the guys understand that. But obviously after, you know, losing, it's just definitely frustrating.
It's Kyler Murray, quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals, following Sunday's regular season-ending loss to the Seattle Seahawks. Cardinals go into the playoffs at 11-6. They are the 5 seed, taking on the L.A. Rams Monday night, first playoff game of Kyler Murray's career. We had the pressure discussion. Mm-hmm. Look, there's pressure on everybody in the playoffs to varying degrees, and Kyler Murray is not immune from that, certainly, because he is he's the future of this team. He is, you know, savior might be a strong word, but he is the quarterback that the Cardinals are putting their eggs in his basket. And they want him to lead them to the future. So that builds pressure. But you brought up something yesterday that I hadn't thought about. And this is why they pay Dan Bickley the big bucks.
Oh, right.
Because he just thinks about things differently.
I'm a true intellectual, Vinny.
You really are. Sometimes I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Neither do I.
You brought up the fact, and we've had this discussion now for 3 years with Kyler Murray. And we've seen it. This has been one of the elements of how he plays quarterback in the NFL. All regular season games to this point. His self-preservation tool is off the charts.
It is.
Self-awareness about his, A, importance to what he's doing for his team, and B, and this they might be equal parts, his physical stature causes him to be very, very aware of avoiding physical contact.
Right.
Which is a good thing.
It is a good thing.
It's a good thing because quarterback play is paramount of importance in the NFL.
Availability is very, very important in the NFL. And to echo that point before you go further, because I like the way you're laying this out, take a look at Baker Mayfield in Cleveland. Take a look at Tua Tagovailoa in Miami. Both of those dudes are too brave for their own good. If you're a quarterback and you look to play physical, you better be able to handle it. Josh Allen can play physical and be available. There are some guys who can't. Baker Mayfield's one of these guys. Baker Mayfield got hurt trying to tackle a guy on a pick six earlier in the season.
Yes.
That's dumb.
And he hasn't been right since.
And he hasn't been right since. And that's stupid. So,
and you know me, Bick. I equate everything back to lines from the original Karate Kid. And one of those lines just popped into my head. You know, when Miyagi's talking to Daniel LaRusso during the tournament in the locker room when he gets hurt, and he says, "You proved a point." He's like, "What point? That I can take a beating?" That's not a point you want to prove as an NFL right. quarterback, especially that's when right. you're not a big guy.
Yeah, so, that's exactly right. So he's very smart in his approach, even if that approach seems really not football-like at times.
But, okay, here's where the question now takes a different spin heading into the playoffs. This self-preservation is for what reason? Is it just for that, self-preservation, avoiding contact, averse to contact, which, again, makes sense? Or are you saving yourself for bigger games because of that availability factor?
Yeah.
Now, I think, I will say this, what you brought up yesterday about this possibility, now that the playoffs are here, it's one and done, you heard Kyler Murray say it, you got to go 1-0 or else you're finished. Do we see a different, more reckless, not reckless, but a little bit more daring Kyler Murray effort on Monday night, beginning on Monday night against the Rams?
It's really a fascinating thing to me because when I look at the NFL playoffs and I look at quarterbacks, Kyler Murray can tilt the entire NFC tournament. And he can do that by becoming more quarterback than he has ever been in his NFL career. And we've seen it at times. And I drew up this example because this I think is what triggered the thought in my head. There have been a couple times this year when there's been a crazy sense of urgency at the end of the game as the Cardinals have been trying to get back into games. It happened against Green Bay. It happened just recently. And in those situations, in those crazy, chaotic drives where they're trying to get points in a hurry, Kyler Murray very often will just wait for his receivers to get downfield, and then he takes off. Because he knows when he gets that ball, the minute he takes that snap in those situations, he knows he is running with the football. And those plays have been devastating to the defense. And they haven't led to Cardinals victories, but they show you exactly what he can do with his legs. And I wonder if we're going to see a lot more of that, not necessarily because it was planned out all along, but just because now it's urgent.
Does it also mean, in your opinion, that when it comes down to it, he trusts himself more than he trusts anything else?
That could be it. That could be part of it as well, because there's no DeAndre Hopkins to throw the ball to in those situations. So I think there might be some of that, and I do think that Kyler Murray can really kind of take his reputation and his status to a whole different level if he unleashes this element to his game. If he has a Lamar Jackson kind of game where he throws for 320 or 270 and then runs for 140, people are going to be like, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by the question. And me personally, in viewing Kyler Murray and watching him play quarterback, I don't necessarily get as frustrated on the slide factor, the self-preservation factor when Kyler Murray is running. Where it gets frustrating for me is because we've seen when things break down in the passing game, Kyler Murray is one of the best in football now already at making something happen. So when he uses his legs to escape the pass rush and gets out of the pocket, and it doesn't matter if he's rolling right or rolling left, his athletic ability mixed with his vision down the field opens up opportunities for the Cardinals that other teams don't have. So when that self-preservation bleeds over into the passing game and the ball gets launched out of bounds because there's nothing there, that to me gets frustrating.
Yes.
Now, again, that self-preservation also falls under the umbrella of not wanting to turn the ball over. I get it. Again, Kyler Murray is a master at it, but I think there's probably been plays out there that could have been made, but he took the safer approach, threw the ball out of bounds, which most coaches will tell you to do. But he's not like other quarterbacks in that realm. When things break down and things get chaotic, he can kill you.
Yes, and I think that there's a level of motivation now that I think is going to be, that's going to really speak to Kyler Murray, because we already know this kid has been raised on championships, won a bunch of them, and to the point where he has talked about preseason football where he just doesn't see the point. He doesn't see the point of playing if it doesn't matter. I think we've kind of seen that in situations. Maybe some of the lethargy comes from in the games that don't seem to matter. Maybe Kyler Murray bears responsibility for some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now with what's in front of him, yeah, he can really take his, he can change everything about this year's tournament and going forward. If he now rises to this moment and becomes even more of a force at quarterback, not only think about what that's going to do for the Cardinals here and now, think about what that's going to do to the Rams. If Kyler Murray goes in and beats Matthew Stafford when the Rams are in, we're all in mode right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's that going to do to, you know what I mean? That's going to
break the spirit of an entire franchise.
It could have a serious damning effect on them.
Yeah,
so
it could.
I'm stoked to see what this is going to look like.
Yeah, you can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line. It's open at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, we get you caught up on the big stories of the day. Rush Hour Reboot with Sarah Cazell is on the agenda straight ahead. It's Pickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Pickley and Murata Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. That's American-owned and American-dreamed Brooklyn Betting.
All right, welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot here on Pickley and Murata Mornings on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station. I am Sarah Cazell. That is Dan Pickley.
Hello.
That is Vince Murata.
Wait,
with his mic off.
What was that one?
Hello. I don't know. I'm just going to do something different and weird every day.
Very international flair. I dig it.
That was good.
Vince Murata back with us in the flesh. Love
in
it.
In the flesh, baby.
And
this is our first show together
of the new year.
But even
in
2 weeks.
Before. Yeah.
Like almost a month.
Yeah.
A single happy tear rolling down my
single?
Face.
Single? Okay.
Yes. And then Jarrett Carlin, who's just sitting right there.
Yeah, he's just...
He never goes anywhere.
Dragon ass.
Neither single nor happy.
We get you caught up on the top stories of the day every day at 7:30 during the Rush Hour reboot. So let's start with the Arizona Cardinals and the LA Rams. I am seeing them on my television right now. Everyone is talking about this wild card matchup, including us, 5 days away from that game on Monday night. Now, yesterday on NFL Network, Willie McGinnis, he made his pick, predicting that one Arizona Cardinal in particular will have a big impact on the game.
Zach Ertz. You remember Zach Ertz? We haven't talked about Zach Ertz. And when you got guys missing on that offense, who do you go to? Who do you feel comfortable with? Who, when you throw the football, they catch the ball, you guys are in sync with the routes and all that, and he'll run a lot of different routes, and he'll probably be open a lot, and they can utilize him. I think Zach Ertz got a great opportunity in the playoffs to come over and sync up with Kyler Murray. I think they'll have some design plays. Kingsbury has some design things planned for him, and you're going to see him at least with 2 touchdowns and at least 10 targets.
Okay.
At least 10 targets.
At least 10 targets. Okay. Dan and Vince, who do you expect to have the biggest impact on the Cardinals-Rams game from the Cardinals' perspective on offense and on defense?
Yeah, offense, it's going to be Kyler Murray. Defense, I am going to guess Chandler Jones.
I agree with Bic on the Kyler Murray front. Ooh, Chandler Jones is a good pick.
I think he's playing for a contract, Vinny.
Like he has been all year.
But now it's at the very end, and now everybody's watching.
It's go time.
Yeah, it is.
I know the people that are rooting for the real big story on defense are hoping it's J.J. Watt just to come in and have some sort of superhero play. I wouldn't count on it. His lift will be more emotional than anything. I hope I'm wrong with that. But, yeah, I'll go with Chandler Jones, too. I'll agree with Bic.
Okay.
He has, I think, the most game-wrecking ability on the Cardinals' defense. And I'd also like to see, and I hate calling this guy out because he's been really good at times, but Marcus Golden has kind of disappeared a little bit after having a big impact. I'd like to see him have an impact on this game as well.
All right, let's go to the Phoenix Suns. Bobby Marks, who covers the NBA for ESPN, yesterday he put out his guide to the NBA trade deadline, which is less than a month from now, February 10th. In that trade guide, he said he would like to see the Suns send Dario Saric, Jalen Smith, and 2 second-round picks to the Trailblazers for power forward Robert Covington. He explained his thinking yesterday on Burns and Gambo. It's a slightly longer cut, but he breaks down why he thinks the Suns should make a move and specifically for Covington.
If you keep this roster intact, I think you could probably get to the NBA Finals again with this roster intact. But you have, you know, something that you didn't have last year, Golden State, right? Like, you're going to be facing them. Certainly Utah will be in the conversation again. We'll see what happens with the Lakers. So I do think there has to be, you know, certainly not a sense of urgency, but I mentioned as far as Covington, team that's fighting for a play-in, gives you a big wing, doesn't really cost you much. Two guys that were really not in the rotation at all. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something, you know, if it doesn't cost you, and with Covington on an expiring, he can give you a rental, and he, you know, you inherit his bird rights, you could potentially re-sign him in the offseason.
Okay, there it is. So, Dan and Vince, would you like to see Robert Covington as a Phoenix Sun?
I don't see what it really adds to the mix. He's a small forward, and that's not what I think the Suns need to be focusing on right now.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of duplication there.
Yeah,
I like Robert Covington as a player. I always have. I think he's a tremendous defensive player, but he's kind of like another version of Jay Crowder.
You don't see
that.
Very much so.
If you're bringing in somebody from the outside to add to the rotation and you're going to carve out minutes for him, I think he needs to fit a different profile. And, mm-hmm. and I know they did it with success last year with Torrey Craig, and there's a lot of Suns fans clamoring for that ingredient again. But we've seen over the last two games, especially last night, get a big in there. If you're going to add a four with some size and some beef and some ability to rebound the basketball. And Robert Covington doesn't really strike me as that guy. Not a bad rebounder, but again, duplication. I don't think they need to go there.
I heard somebody speculate that why don't the Suns go and address their backup point guard situation by trying to get Goran Dragic to come back. Mm. And I thought, okay, that certainly would be an upgrade over Campaign. He's a ball dominant guy, but then again, so is Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I think of Campaign's role on this team, and it just seems important to me.
Yeah,
energy he brings when he's on.
Right? Yeah. Yeah,
he's been on a lot less often this year.
Yeah, yes, yes. There's no denying that.
Is there a name out there as far as the a backup point guard, not named Goran Dragic, that you'd be interested in? Or
I personally am very comfortable with this basketball team and the pieces that they have.
Okay.
And so that's why when I've been hearing a lot of these rumblings about what they should do at the trade deadline, I'm like, you know, for once, I think they're good. I think the time to do something was last year and they passed on it. Mm. But I think they rectified that.
All right, let's move on to college football. Two nights ago, Jaden Delora announced that he is transferring from Washington State to Arizona. He was the Pac-12's Offensive Freshman of the Year. With Washington State as their quarterback, throwing for 23 touchdowns and nearly 2,800 yards. The Wildcats also last night landed a four-star transfer from UCLA, a freshman D lineman. Arizona has really pounded the pavement this offseason with the transfer portal and recruiting hard, while it has been quieter in comparison for ASU. So, Dan and Vince, what do you think about what you are seeing from ASU compared to U of A over the past month or so?
I think ASU is just taking their time, you know. No panic. Everything's fine. It's all good. They got a plan.
Yeah, I'm a little bit kind of itchy about this, if you will. I think that they're in danger of really wasting an entire year. And I don't know whether their recruiting is just is that impossible given everything that's gone down or what,
but yeah.
It just feels like this football program was once. It felt that they were on the cusp of getting there, of being that team we wanted them to be.
Look, traditional recruiting of high school athletes and junior college athletes has been very slow, and I don't think that's going to change. But Herm Edwards said it. I think he said it on our show right after the regular season ended. Hey, we're going to target like 12 guys in the transfer portal. They've lost a lot of guys in the transfer portal. They get the running back from Wyoming last night, but I think that's where the panic is for ASU fans right now is if that's your stated goal, why is it so difficult to get those guys right now? It's rough. They're in a really, really tough spot right now.
They are.
And it's self-inflicted. There's nobody else to blame but themselves for it. I'm wondering if they're able to pull out of it. I know a lot of people have doubts on that right now. But to credit... Jed Fish has done a really good job to get a quarterback like Delora in there, to get some high school recruits that have some stars next to their names. You know, it's up to them to develop them now, but they've been buzzworthy this offseason. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and when is the NCAA investigation ever going to come to a head?
Probably like 10 years from now.
They're taking a break, I think.
Just chilling.
Right. We'll get to it.
Or we won't.
It took 3.5 years for the basketball with U of A.
Yeah, but there was no dossier delivered to anybody in the U of A investigation. It's like, here, we've done all your work
here,
for
we've
you.
Done your work
here
for
you go.
You. Well, here's a list of people who want to talk to you.
That'll just make it a speedy 2.5 years for the
I've
NCAA.
Seen three toed sloths move faster than the NCAA, babe. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Every day at 7:30, Oh Sarah, the Ruthless One reboots us with the Rush Hour reboot. Coming up next, only 14 teams remaining in the Super Bowl tournament, as people are calling it this year. The Cardinals are one of them. Let's get
the
into
NFL
where,
championship.
Is that really
tournament.
Becoming a thing?
It is becoming
people
a
calling
thing.
It the tournament. Yeah.
Cliff, Ertz, everyone's calling it a tournament.
That is true. Where do the Cardinals rank on that list of 14?
At least they're not saying tournament.
We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Cardinals championship chase coverage presented by 72 Soul on the home of Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata talk cards in the playoffs. Now.
Our guys understand we got an opportunity to play a division opponent to advance in the playoffs. We're very familiar with them, and they are with us, and you know it'll be a dogfight. And so I don't think there's anybody sitting around worried about what happened yesterday. It's we know what's out in front of us, the opportunity we have, and so all the focus is about moving forward.
Rams, Cardinals, Chapter 3. This time, it's personal.
Yeah, I
don't. Very on Monday.
We've had two very different games between these teams.
Yes. No doubt about it.
No doubt.
The Cardinals playing arguably their best, most complete game of the year back in, what was that, week five against the Rams?
Mm-hmm.
Where they went to L.A. SoFi Stadium and just manhandled the Rams, who were coming off a big, high-profile win off against Tampa Bay the week prior. And based on the recent history between those two teams, not many people gave the Cardinals a chance in that game, and they dominated. And then we saw the flip side of that, and the almost polar opposite of it in Glendale when the Rams came to town.
Yeah, we did. And I think one of the big differences were when the Rams came to Glendale for that game, there was a lot on the line for the Cardinals. They could have buried the Rams right then. They could have practically secured the division title right then and there. And I think they looked at the Rams and they said, wow, Jalen Ramsey isn't playing? Wow, that secondary isn't very good to begin with. You take him out of the mix. And I think they kind of tried to, they got pass happy. And as a result, what they did is they ended up, you know, paying that price with Kyler Murray getting just harassed all night long.
And then going from that second matchup to what we could see Monday at SoFi Stadium, talk about just from that standpoint alone, the Jalen Ramsey Rams secondary factor. You could see the polar opposite of that game. Ramsey might be the only guy in the Rams secondary that's able to play.
That's right.
They are totally banged up. I found this interesting, too, is we spent some time during the season not really wringing our hands over it, but certainly considering where the Cardinals were when things were going well, too, what the Cardinals' place was in the national perspective among, you know, the pecking order. And they topped some power rankings at better times of the season. But I find it interesting when you get to the playoff field. 14 teams remaining, and we know Tennessee and Green Bay have the weekend off. So 12 teams playing this week. But several different outfits have offered up their postseason power rankings. Where do the Cardinals rank in that? The first one I saw was from The Ringer. Danny Kelly put his rankings together of all 14 teams in the playoffs. He's got the Arizona Cardinals 11th out of 14, ahead of only Philadelphia, Las Vegas, and Pittsburgh. And I know that the common reaction this year to power rankings was, well, the Cardinals get no respect. I have no problem with that. A minor issue with the Cardinals being ranked below San Francisco at number 10, a team they beat twice this year. But who cares?
But
it doesn't mean anything.
But here's the way to view that, though. Essentially, those three teams that they are ahead are the last three teams that like made the playoffs.
Yes.
And the Cardinals were a team that clinched the playoffs like a few weeks ago and was the first team to 10 wins and was the last undefeated team. For them to now be in that grouping, it stinks.
It does stink, but it's not Danny Kelly from The Ringer's fault, and it's nobody at ESPN's fault.
No.
It's their own fault.
It is their own fault. That's exactly right. It is their own fault. This is what happens to you when you do not play well on the biggest of stages, and this is what happens when you again begin to collapse at the end of seasons. It's a very, very, it's a bad look, and people are going to, and that's the price you're going to pay. People are not going to trust you in big games. The expectations are going to go down. You're not going to be included in that party anymore. And you're right. That's a tough thing to go through because for 12 weeks, the Cardinals hovered around the top.
That is true.
I mean, it started right away with that game in Tennessee. That was an impact statement. And that's so the Cardinals need to find a way to end a season the way they've begun seasons. You're gonna have more question marks. I mean, it's when you're sitting here now after losing four times in 5 weeks, it's fair to say, why has Cliff Kingsbury's regime never beaten the Detroit Lions in three tries? What does that tell you?
Doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And all those questions are fair when you continue to do the same thing at the ends of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they have to get into the mindset that we're starting a new season now. the playoffs is another new season, and we have to get into that mindset again or something.
And that's what I'm kind of hoping comes from the J.J. Watt energy. If he plays, and I feel pretty convinced that he's going to give it a shot, and I think that's what I'm hoping for with Kyler Murray, and just that this idea of not having the requisite intensity to match the other team. That's a damning thing to say about a football
team. But again, on the rankings, there's no team in the playoffs on a worse streak of their last five games than the Cardinals.
Yeah.
So essentially, there's no team playing worse right now in the playoffs than the Cardinals.
And yet they still, when you look at them and you've seen what they've done, you can also see a team that might be able to run the table and actually get to the Super Bowl. I don't feel that way about the Eagles. I certainly don't feel that way about the Steelers.
That's why when I'm thinking, like, if you compare just the talent on the teams compared to, like, the Raiders, the Eagles, the Steelers, like, how are they in that group?
Yeah, and without DeAndre Hopkins, and I'm assuming he will not be available. And if he is available, I don't know how good he's going to be. But it's clear they're going to have to be good across the board.
Well, I mean, he's on injured reserve. They haven't designated him for return even. And you know, it's Wednesday. I know the game's not until Monday. There would have to be a lot of ground covered between now and a return for DeAndre Hopkins. And I agree with you. It seems very unlikely. By the way, the power rankings that they have with the playoff teams, Green Bay, number one, I have no problem with that. Kansas City, two. Tampa Bay, three. Tennessee, four. So the number one seed in the AFC is not even the highest ranked team. And I got to tell you, the job that Mike Vrabel did this year, remember the reaction to when Derrick Henry went down? Not only do you lose a dynamic player, but they lost their entire identity offensively. And he hasn't played since.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And they've had a revolving group of running backs trying to fill in, including Adrian Peterson at one point.
Yeah.
And they're the number one seed in the AFC.
He's going to win the Coach of the Year,
definitely,
right?
Should.
Because Belichick fell off the map, and Cliff really fell off the map.
Yeah.
And I don't even know who else is a candidate.
I think is a candidate because of what they dealt with in Green Bay.
But you've got to
consider this dude in Vegas. You've got to consider Rich Bisaccia.
We've seen an interim coach win before. Bruce Arians did it.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, given the fact of the John Gruden thing and then the Henry Ruggs thing and all of that, to win 10 games, that's something.
Just think of this now. Two-thirds, not even halfway through the season, two-thirds of the way through the season, we had Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. I would put questions, which is more likely, Coach of the Year or MVP, and we were saying both were really possible. Now neither is going to get a vote.
No.
I know.
And neither deserves one. We're halfway through on this Wednesday. Coming up to kick off the second half of the show, as always, buckle up for the Bickley Blast.
Definitely.
It's next. Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.